This is OTB AM.
This Liverpool team are going to coast to a league title. Fair enough, that's a great achievement. But that Man United team were an all-time great because they weren't playing very well early in the season.
Does Everton have to happen in the same period of time, though? Did Liverpool not have those elements of that team?
They have to win the Champions League. They have to win the Champions League this year. But not if they're... To equal Manchester United's treble season, they have to win at least the Champions League in the league, right? And you could say that by not winning a cup, if they don't win a cup, then they're not... It's not as good a season. Man United are always going to be able to say, we won a treble. Did you win a treble? No.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7.30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
A huge night last night for the FAI. Their much talked about EGM was held essentially remotely to give those people with a vote the opportunity to decide whether or not they backed the plans put in place by the current board and the independent chairman and the interim chief executive, having done a deal with the government and various other stakeholders, including the banks. The Bank of Ireland, specifically the Bank of Ireland, back in March now at this point. There has been much debate recently about it. There was the meeting a couple of weeks ago at the Red Cow where there was an opportunity to clear the air. Some changes as a result of that meeting were agreed with the government. Some stuff that looked like it had been set in stone by the agreement and the memorandum of understanding that had been signed ultimately ended up being negotiable. And a few concessions were made. The independent chairman no longer has the casting vote. The 6-6 breakdown of the board will actually go ahead and continue. The 10-year term limits for those people who are currently on committees has been essentially extended for another couple of years to give people at least another couple of years to get used to the idea of 10-year term limits. So we're going to speak with Larry Bass in a moment. First of all, I want to bring you this from last night. We have the FAI interim CEO, Gary Owens, talking with Joe, followed by the FAI's independent chairman, Roy Barrett, speaking to Nathan Murphy. So two quick clips for you to give you a sense of what they're talking about last night. And it's specifically about the role of the governor of the Bank of Ireland in the appointment of Roy Barrett. Have a look.
But you don't want this around the FAI anymore. None of us want this around the FAI. We don't want to come out in this way either. You know, I mean, how many months are we into it and we find out the Patrick Kennedy link? And all of that, just for obvious reasons, leaves people a little bit uneasy, to say the least. Why are we finding out about this? Why is it coming out this way?
Well, I think, Joe, to be fair, AMROB were the people who were employed to recommend people to the nominations committee. And, you know, Roy went through that process, and AMROB would have reached out to different people, as they probably always do, to sort of achieve that.
Do you think, given the Bank of Ireland situation with the FAI, AMROB should have been going near Patrick Kennedy?
I don't know whether he did or not, to be honest. I don't know the circumstances on whether Patrick rang them or AMROB rang Patrick Kennedy.
Okay, either way, I would put it, that phone call shouldn't happen. Bank of Ireland should not be consulted when it comes to an FAI hiring. Like, if we're doing things properly, Bank of Ireland shouldn't be anywhere near that.
Well, I think I would certainly accept the point in terms of potential conflict of interest. But I think what we were left with, I basically came in just as the MOU was being basically signed and had to sort of finalise the arrangements with Bank of Ireland. And quite honestly, Joe, there was nobody else interested in it. You know, we did make one or two conversations. I had one or two conversations with alternatives to see whether or not we could get cheaper financing. And nobody was interested in providing us with the type of support that we needed. Yeah. And we were working constantly with Sport Ireland and the department and indeed UEFA and FIFA to try and get the guarantees in place that would actually allow the Bank of Ireland to give us the money. So, you know, I'd go as far as to say it was the only show in town at the time.
As you say, like, it's such a shame that Stephen and the team start in Bulgaria on Thursday, which I'm really looking forward to. It'll be good to talk about football now and Finland at the weekend, and we have no people who are able to attend that. So that's a real shame, and that's going to be a real challenge for the organisation.
I understand there were several questions about your appointment and the role of Patrick Kennedy within that.
Yeah.
from Bank of Ireland.
Yeah.
When did you first speak to Patrick Kennedy about this job?
I only spoke to Patrick once when I was approached by AMRAP. And I spoke with AMRAP. They told me that a number of people had recommended me, including Patrick. I talked to Patrick after that meeting for about 2 or 3 minutes, and that's what it was. So it, I think quite a lot has been made of it, and there's a bit of a conspiracy theory around it, but there's nothing untoward in my view, and certainly in terms of my dealing with Bank of Ireland or any other the stakeholders, you know, did it represent any form of conflict whatsoever? No, it didn't.
Did you not think at any stage when you're having that very short conversation with him that
I had the
him being the head of the main banker for a debt-ridden organisation may well be a conflict, even viewed as a conflict from the outside?
Sure, but you have to remember when I had that conversation, I had only just been approached, and what I did, having met AMRAP the first time, was said I would think about the role, and in thinking of it, I wanted to meet a number of people, including people from the FAI, from the accountants, Grant Thornton, from the department, for the ministers, from Sport Ireland, from you know, Mr. Horan, who did the governance reforms, to acquaint myself with all of the issues and make a decision as to whether I thought I could help the organisation or not. So in terms of did I think that meeting in any way compromised me? Not at all, actually.
There's a lot of talk this week of a new era, both on and off the pitch. But do you think this story casts something of a shadow over that? That the transparency that people would expect from the new FAI maybe isn't quite there?
But it's completely transparent. Like it's completely transparent. You know, AMRAP approached me on the basis of a number of recommendations. One of whom we now know, and it's as simple as that. It's actually quite normal way of doing business.
Okay, so that is Roy Barrett was the last voice you heard there. Before that, you heard Gary Owens, both speaking with Nathan and Joe last night. Larry Bass is the chairman of Cavan Tealy and also a member of one of the FAI's finance committees. Larry, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, Ger. How are you?
Good. So you've had a relatively prominent role in this story becoming public over the last few days. Can you maybe spool us back a couple of days to the point where I think you actually wrote a letter to Roy Barrett. Is that how this began to emerge?
I've written a few letters to Roy Barrett. I suppose you need to spool back further. I was one of these people that, you know, post the governance review last summer, I was asked to put myself forward for a couple of committees on the FAI through the FAI Council. I put my name forward for the Finance Committee because I felt I could bring some experience to bear. I've been on Finance, Audit and Risk Committees of National Boards. And I thought that, you know, the FAI is something that needed to clean up its Governance Act. I think that was one of the things that was pretty obvious. So I was looking forward to getting my sleeves rolled up and helping out if I can and trying to, you know, help chart a path back to a successful football association. And as Roy and both Gary have both said, you know, we need to put the past behind us and move on with the football. But unfortunately, they haven't covered themselves in glory when it comes to corporate governance. The simple effect of having a finance committee overseeing the using the fiduciary duties to just question the financial arrangements or implications for the organisation, they haven't met. So I can see no reason. They keep kicking the touch and giving excuses, saying there was no terms of reference. Well, there was. They said they weren't happy with the terms of reference, yet you know, there's an interim board, an interim chair, an interim CEO. You could have an interim finance committee and still have the questions and get on with it. So excuses aren't good enough. I would like to see the finance committee being established and doing what it's supposed to do. It's not there to...
Can I just I'm sorry to interrupt because obviously Gary Owens isn't here and I don't want to get bogged down in this part of the story too much because there's loads to get our teeth into. But Gary Owens did tell Joe on last night's show that they brought that to the board and the current board were unhappy with the terms of reference because they felt that it was reducing their power of oversight. Now, whether or not that's true, I suspect you have a different view and that's fair enough, right? And look, the sooner all these committees get up and running and are reporting to the board and we all have a sense of those committees functioning properly, which is, I think, what we want, then that would be good. Was that enough for you? Was that enough of a red flag straight away? Do you have any sympathy with the view that, like, your committee gets formed last, I think, October, and the new independent chair comes in January, and then the CEO comes in after that. So technically it's not their committee, and I can understand that there was a massive flaming fire, the house is on fire over here with the possibility of the entire organisation going bust. You probably want to put that fire out first before this fire over here. Maybe they should have been doing a little bit of firefighting on both sides.
Yeah, you know, if you're going into a forest fire, you want to make sure you've got cover all around. And I think ignoring simple corporate governance when you're doing something on an organization where corporate governance was to the fore is careless, is the best way I could describe it, for if nothing else. And I think if there was an issue, if the board had a concern over the terms of reference, which nobody had said anything about that up until these recent excuses started coming out. It was never conveyed to us there was any issue. You know, they should have just met. And if there was to be parameters around what the finance committee could say or do, you know, that could be put in place. But just ignoring it and not putting in place, you know, I was elected by the council. So I'm answering to the council. As a person on the finance committee representing the council, I was asking questions in relation to finance. And when it came to hearing that Roy Barrett was potentially conflicted in his role as the chair through any relationship he may have with the single biggest creditor, I just have to ask the question. I asked the question. And to me, I don't believe it's been answered correctly. If you have one single creditor who are the major creditor, and then that creditor has a role in whatever the role is in appointing the person who's going to oversee the negotiation on that debt, that simply feels to me incorrect.
Just to play devil's advocate and to, just to tease this out a little bit, okay? Neil Reardon had a piece last week where the more details of this emerged, right? He said that Barrett secured the job when two preferred candidates declined and a third was not approached. Like, in that instance, I can see how AMROP end up going, okay, look, we need a list of people here. The first two people we've gone to have said no thanks, and then a third candidate's not approached. I don't know why the third candidate wouldn't have been approached, but it doesn't seem like there was a whole slew of people queuing up to take this gig.
I wasn't part of that process. My understanding is there were a number of names or candidates preferred, you know, out of the blue, Roy's name came into the fold. I've never met Roy. I've never had a conversation with the man. And he could be an absolute fantastic chair. I just think the way this is operated is incorrect. As a member of the finance committee, I was questioning it. And we do have to get our house in order. We do have to get things right. But, you know, shutting up shop on one of the most serious parts of corporate governance and just ignoring it. And you now have a situation where, you know, thankfully now we can move on. A decision is made and I'm a Democrat like everybody else. And we can try and move on and do the work that's supposed to be done. But the finance committee still hasn't been put together. The latest I heard was it might be convened in March. But if I'm led to believe what Gary Owens is saying, they're bringing in the right and proper test for all candidates for these committees. Am I right and proper? Are others? There's nothing to stop the committee being formed, you know, post AGM at least at the latest, as far as I'm concerned, not waiting until March.
Sorry, March next year.
Well, that's what Gary Owens said in a recent interview about it.
That does seem to be quite far away. I think you're right to be asking questions. I think given the amount of public money that's gone in and given the fact that essentially the final guarantee on a portion of the loan, some of it seems to be being guaranteed by UEFA and FIFA and some of it seems to be being guaranteed by the government. So absolutely, I think everybody wants a strong finance committee, which, you know, isn't just controlled by the board, essentially, because like this, there needs to be checks and balances, and certainly history shows that the more checks and balances there are in all of our sports organisations, the better it's going to be. Do you have concerns that the board were concerned about the powers of the finance committee? If that story is accurate.
Well, if they're concerned, what is the problem? Let's hear about it. You know, that's what openness and transparency is. And I would question the minister. The previous minister obviously had a close relationship with Roy, and the incumbent minister, you know, I don't know what her relationship is, but asking, questions about some of the roles and just getting all the facts, I would have thought is critical. Nobody has contacted me. It's no secret that I had questions about the various aspects. And if the government are going to stand over something, you would think that they would check out all the facts around these things. Sport Ireland, again, I've had no conversations there. They don't have to contact me, but all I did was ask questions. That's what I see the role of a finance committee or an audit and risk committee. You're not there to do the work. You're not there to do the negotiation. You're not there to set out the agenda for spending the cash, but you are there to oversee and ask questions, is it being done correctly?
How many people are on that committee, as a matter of interest? How many of you are there?
Well, there were two elected through the council, and then there needed to be somebody, I think, from the board would be appointed probably as the chair of the committee, and then a couple of independent members. That's my understanding. But because we haven't met, I couldn't honestly answer any more. But, a finance committee that I've been on previously could be anything from three people to five people.
And just explain for people who are listening who might be unfamiliar, if you're not setting out financial policy and you're not doing deals, what exactly are you doing?
Well, you're questioning that some of the executive and or the board are setting out policy, that you're there as a sort of the full stop to make sure that the right and correct questions have been asked. I mean, that's why I've said, I'd like to have seen, as a finance committee member, I'd like to have seen some cost-benefit analysis on the options. I mean, there was one option put to the council last night. And that option, having spent 6 months trying to control the board and wanting to have control of the board, they capitulated a couple of weeks ago to change the rules to allow the president to have the casting vote rather than the chair. And also to extend term for people who've been there for over 10 years. So, as you'd rightly said, things were negotiable. The only thing that seems to be not negotiable is the actual debt. So a couple of things I would like to have seen. I'd like to have seen cost-benefit analysis on where the debt negotiation is going, cost-benefit analysis on other options, up to and including, liquidation, examinership. What can you do to give choice? None of that was made apparent. And, there's been chapter and verse in history of where examinership have helped organisations and companies not only fix financial issues, but get stronger and better. And we didn't see any discussion about that. And I'm just asking the questions. That's all I am.
So can you explain maybe to people what an examinership might have looked like, or a successful examinership in this instance might have looked like? Because I guess, certainly from listening to the unions, they were very concerned about the potential for job losses. And, Gary Owens last night said the only show in town was the debt and the government deal, that he picked up the phone to other potential lenders and couldn't even get a meeting.
Yeah, that's, I wasn't in any of those conversations, so I don't know. All I'm saying is there are other options, and they didn't talk about examinership. And with examinership, and, I feel for all the employees, you have to remember as well, there are over 200 people working in the FEI, and they do a fantastic job. And they've done an extremely fantastic job during the teeth of all of this, when all of this is going on above their heads, and yet they've got to get on and do the day job. So, hats off to every single individual employee. One thing with an examinership is you get the protection of the courts, number one. So until all the details of the business is looked at and a plan is brought out, you just don't start laying people off, and you restructure the organization to what it should be and what it can be in the future, including negotiating with all the creditors and setting out a new plan to work within its means. Currently, the FAI, if it's to meet its debt repayments, it's going to be living a little bit beyond its means. It's not going to have an awful lot of free cash available to put into Irish football and develop the facilities that are badly required.
shouldn't they pay their debts, though? Isn't that the right thing to do for any organisation, particularly a sports organisation?
Of course they should, but also anyone who provides credit needs to make sure that before they give the credit, there's the means to repayment. So, you know, there's all sorts of negotiations need to be taken on and looked into. And all I was looking for was, you know, what were the options? What happened? Asking just simple questions that I felt was required to be asked, still haven't heard answered.
Do you think it was realistic to expect that the Bank of Ireland would offer a write-down, given that ultimately they know UEFA and FIFA have loads of money and there's whatever the tenancy agreement is on the Aviva, at some point there is a value to that, although it's very difficult to crystallise exactly what that might be, and that the government were unlikely on their watch to allow the FAI to go into liquidation? Certainly, maybe they might have had some appetite for examinership, but I'm not sure about that in the middle of the crisis. That ultimately Bank of Ireland are in a very strong position going, we're happy to refinance, but you're going to have to pay your debts.
You know, I can't answer. I'm not here to negotiate for Bank of Ireland. They're well capable of doing that. It seemed to have done a very good job in this case. But I think, you know, questions have to be asked. If Bank of Ireland senior personnel are suggesting to people to head up the organisation they're going to have to negotiate with. That's all. I question that. I do question the fact that there was no negotiation of the debt, none whatsoever. I actually think the FEI had a strong hand as well. What is the market for a part share in a national stadium? So if the bank were going to call in the loan, and they were sitting on a property that they had a part share of, that's not a very strong hand. So I'll sit down and negotiate with anyone and put all the cards on the table and drive the hardest bargain as possible.
So is that ultimately your contention here, is that you don't feel like the FAI got a good deal? Is that because, you know, ultimately,
because I haven't seen the details of it, and I have asked, you know, that's what the Finance Committee should be doing, is overseeing these things and seeing all the papers related to it. All I'm doing is asking the questions, and I would like to have seen what the options were. I'd like to see in any sort of business, you know, whether it's big or small, you should do cost benefit analysis on the various decisions that are going to affect the ongoing future of the business. And we just didn't see it. That's all.
Gary Owens isn't here, right? But he did say that's the only show in town. We were 2 weeks from going bust. We had to do a deal. No one was offering us finance. Like if you spool back to that point in time, the FAI was a toxic brand. It's a little less toxic now, but still it's going to be very interesting to see what sponsors come on board as the main sponsors for the next while. It's not in a very good position. The cost benefit analysis might not have resulted in a hugely different, and I don't know that they didn't do one. You're saying you haven't seen it, and that's fair enough. Were there multiple options at that point, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't in that place where I could, you know, I wasn't in the driving seat having those conversations. And I'll take Gary's word for it, that if there was no other game in town. But, you know, all I'm saying is that there was, you know, there was questions that I was asking as a Finance Committee member. And I wanted to ask them within the Finance Committee. So we weren't, you know, these things could be answered there and then and dealt with. But because they elected not to proceed with convening the Finance Committee, I felt it was my fiduciary duty on behalf of the people who elected me, which were the council members, to ask simple questions. I also decided, unlike some other colleagues on other committees who got exasperated and just left and resigned from committees, I just feel that if I'm going to be taken off the committee, then it's up to the council and to remove me, and until I'm removed, I'll have to continue asking questions. That's what I was elected to do.
So you're going to stay. You're going to stay the course, and that's good to hear, because it feels like these questions are absolutely necessary. Is it possible that the organisation, as it's constituted now, can appoint a finance committee and begin to function properly, or is this current board and the chairman and the CEO? Do you feel like there's no recovery from the position that they put themselves in, as far as you're concerned?
I've called for the resignation of the independent members of the board, with the exception of Robert Watt, who joined it late, because I feel the oversight in this matter is questionable. And I think the FEI, above anything else, needs to have squeaky clean corporate governance. End of story, full stop. And if it's going to be, the brand is going to be reborn, if it's going to achieve the heady heights of Italia 90 and all of that good stuff that it should be doing, you know, you've got the Irish girls, ladies international team starting to now achieve the heights of, you know, stratospheric performance, and all our underage teams, and hopefully now Stephen Kenny's new brush will do the same. The football side of it is thankfully going really well. We need to get our house in order off the pitch, and I was trying to make sure that it was starting from a squeaky clean start with all full transparency. And I believe, I'm a full believer in clear transparency. It's ultimate power. If things aren't transparent, questions get asked.
Can I just ask why the difference between the independent directors and the elected football directors? Why do you exempt the elected football directors from your call for resignation?
Because my feeling is that the independent directors' number one duty will be to ask the questions independent of all the people who have been involved in football for many years. You know, and that's, I would have thought that's their job. They're there to put on the board, to oversee the football side, to make sure everything has been done correctly. And frankly, corporate governance for me is the foundation.
But once you're on the board, you're on the board. You're not on the board with a specific role unless you're actually appointed on to a specific committee. So, for example, if an independent member of the board gets appointed the chair of your finance committee, then they have responsibility to report back to the board. But once you're in the boardroom, once the meeting starts, everybody's equal.
Yeah, but I think the independent people have been brought in so that they're there to, you know, question what's going on. And that's why, everybody wanted to see a board. And I applaud the fact that there's a new board and there is independent members. But I was questioning their appointment if they're not actually doing the basic details of corporate governance. Maybe they were inside the boardroom, but you're not seeing it outside.
Okay. Do you have confidence in the independent chair now?
I think there's a question over this appointment, and you know, all I can do is ask the questions, and it's up to the independent chair to answer them.
Them last night, as far as he's concerned, Larry. And in fairness to him, he says that what happened was AMROP approached him, and he phoned one of the people who talked to AMROP to see what the crack was before he got the gig. And then he takes the gig. So he's, as far as he's concerned, has answered that. And I suppose it's a question for you, as somebody who's steeped in football in Ireland, a chair of a League of Ireland club. Do you have confidence in the independent chair at the moment?
I'm going to reserve my position on that and see how things play out. And I still think there's questions to be answered in the relationship between the main creditor. I'd like to see the full resolution and answers on that. We're living in a different Ireland now. This is an Ireland that doesn't take, lightly simple questions on where there may be a conflict of interest. And until there's absolute proof positive there isn't, you have to ask the question, simple as.
Okay, so if there was proof positive that there wasn't a conflict of interest, that would be the point where you would say, I have confidence. In terms of reserving your position, what would force you to say you don't have confidence?
Well, if I feel that there was something untoward and there was nothing being done, but at the moment, I believe that the ignoring of the convening of two of the key committees, for me, I have questioned it. That's why I wrote to Roy in the first place and questioned things, because it seems to be the only way to get an answer is you have to send a letter. And then when you send a letter and ask for it to be copied to every member of the board, suddenly it's in the press before half of them even read it. So that seems to be the way to get any answers. It's unfortunate, but that's not the way it should be done if the committees were convened and we could all ask questions in the form that they should be done.
So last week's New Era launch, you're not convinced that we've begun a new era just yet?
Look, it's teething problems, I hope. And I do hope and wish everybody well in trying to drive on. But it's... if there's a cloud and it has to be blown away, I would concern myself in getting all that done correctly and done first. because the FAI can't live under any cloud. The FAI needs to be reborn and get back to what it's there to do. Next year it's 100 years old, and it would be great to get into that year with the organization in fine fettle, with a great foundation and every part of it unquestionably in great hands.
Larry Bass, chairman of Cabinet Tealy and a member of the as yet unconstituted finance committee, thanks very much for joining us this morning and giving us your reaction to yesterday's vote.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.